Hey everybody, welcome to This Week in 1920s Baseball. This is your man, Bucketfoot.
Hey, it's Sweetbread here. What's going on?
Hey, good to see you. We haven't talked baseball in 1920s in like 100 years.
It's been at least 100 years. It was before 1922 that we talked last.
About
1922.
The timeline's already confusing me. But I'm glad to be back talking baseball. Old-timey baseball was on my mind because during the Phillies World Series, they kept mentioning how the Phillies were essentially the biggest underdog since 1908. Is that right?
1908 or 1906. One of those years.
Yeah, you're right.
When the biggest win differential?
Yeah, when the Cubs were...
That was their winning year. They had 116 wins, right?
But they lost to the White Sox in the series.
They lost to their cross-town rival.
And they were the Hitless Wonders, which is the stupidest nickname. I don't know what that even supposed to mean. But anyway, we're not going to talk about 1906. We're going to talk about 1922.
Because it's 100 years later.
100 years later.
It's 2022.
It is, yes. That is today. And I did some looking through the archives, always super fun, to find the old articles and just break them down. And we're going to give you the stats and the Sisler watch and the pennant race and all that good stuff.
Yeah, we've missed a lot. So
trying
we'll
to catch
fill
up.
You in.
Yeah. This article just struck me as so funny because it really took me a while to even realize it was about baseball. The writing is so weird. It's about a college game, but we can still talk about it. The headline is Hope and Despair. And the writing, again, so good. 1920 sports writing. This unexpected and inexcusable jamming of the junctions gave the Robins a lot of new hope and likewise started the Corsairs on their way to the little town of Waterloo. Like, what does that mean?
That's got to be a reference to Napoleon.
Right. Like, they are going to be eliminated from the playoffs or something.
Okay.
They'll be exiled.
Yeah.
And the jamming of the junctions?
I have no idea what that means. Is that a train term? Like junctions? Where you?
I thought it was a weird way of saying the bases are loaded.
That might be it, yeah.
That might not be, though.
Junctions for second, third, yeah.
Could be.
Yeah.
Reuther was rushed up to bat for high, and he grounded out. But this enabled Olsen to proceed home. Okay. So, a guy, fielder's choice, and someone scored. DeBerry is his last name. And Burt Griffith both tallied a moment later. So, yeah, the bases must have been loaded. DeBerry and Burt Griffith both tallied a moment later on a two-bagger by Johnston, who scored on a similar smash by Tom Griffith. This is like reading another
puzzle and an article. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, the bases were loaded, a.k.a. the junctions were jammed. We got to bring that one back.
Yeah.
And then some guys scored on a similar smash. Like, there's a rule against saying double twice in the same paragraph, I think. Like, editors had... You had to use so many weird synonyms. Nice was ordered to run for Griffith, and he certainly made a bold effort to dash home from second on a freakish play. Okay, so Nice was a pinch runner, and he tried to score from second on this following play. See if you can figure out what the heck happened. Hamilton had replaced Glasner, and Wheat, in trying to duck away from an inshoot, touched the ball with his bat and sent it across the left side of the infield.
Okay, so an inshoot must have been an inside pitch.
Oh, okay.
That moved in on him.
Got it. And he tried to get out of the way.
Tried to get out of the way, but he still swung.
He didn't swing, but it hit his bat.
And
landed fair. So that counts as a fair ball.
Yes.
I thought an inshoot, for some reason, I was thinking it was like a cutoff throw, like a throw. But no, you're right. An inshoot's a pitch. Why didn't they just say an inside pitch? Okay, so we tried to get out of the way of an inside pitch. It hit his bat. Okay, and this guy tried to score from second on that. Barnhart was taken by surprise, and he had a bit of trouble in gathering up the stray pellet. Stray pellet, we know what that means. I mean, that just means
it's a baseball.
A ball, yeah. When he got a hold of it, he made a pippin of a peg to the plate, and Gooch put the pill against Nice as he was plunging for the saucer. It's so many unnecessary synonyms.
But we love it. Right?
Oh, I love it. When he got the ball, he made a good throw, and the catcher tagged him as he was sliding. This wound up the ninth inning, but left affairs at a standstill and made it necessary to take on five added periods.
Wow, five extra innings.
Yeah, so it ended up going to the 14th. All right, so that's a little bit of...
So he tried to score from second on a...
check swing, essentially.
Like a little dink in front of the plate.
Probably, though, the infielders didn't even think it was fair. Because it was an inside pitch, and he tried to dive out of the way. It hit his bat and, like, rolled down the third baseline. And, like, no one really thought it was fair, except the runner was heads up.
Yeah, I probably didn't say anything.
Just let it roll. But and the runner was heads up and a little too aggressive. Because he just he tried to score. The third baseman eventually picked it up and threw him out. That would have been an amazing way to win.
What a fascinating article.
It is a funny bit of 1922.
The writings.
The Corsairs, I Googled it. That was the Massachusetts University baseball team. So I don't know who they were playing. When it said the Robins, I thought it was Brooklyn. Because the Dodgers at the time were called the Robins because of their manager, Wilbur Robinson. Yeah,
we'll have to find out who the Robins were.
Yeah, they must have been a college team obviously playing against them. So there you go. There's a 5-minute breakdown of a completely meaningless college game from 1922. Let's get to the meat, the senior circuit, the slobby meat. Let's get to the slobs. So what happened in 1922? Let's just
we were talking about 1922 earlier this year. What did we have the last one in May? Or June.
And we know that Babe Ruth was suspended to start the year because of...
him and Bob Uysel, who you might remember from the 1920 or 1921 season, was a hotshot rookie at that time that
and
came
he
up.
He stayed with them. He was part of the Murderers Row.
That
I get it confused because it sounds like...
Murderers Row. Murder.
And Bob Uysel, I get him confused with Stan Musial, who's from a different era. Bob Uysel is not that famous. He was very good.
But he's not that famous.
He's kind of forgettable
to me.
I think
he's a Hall of Famer now. I would imagine.
He was very good, but he's kind of forgettable to me. But yeah, he was a slugger. But him and Ruth were both barnstorming in the offseason.
Right, which at that point was...
the biggest faux pas you could do.
Yeah, because Landis was on the case.
Kennesaw Mountain Landis, post-Black Sox crackdown.
Now, why weren't they allowed to barnstorm? It makes no sense to me. They got to make a little bit of money, you know? They're not paid enough.
And it promotes the game in the off season and then the outer reaches. Good question. I mean, the answer is he thought it threatened.
He's a maniac.
Yeah. I was just going to say he thought that it threatened their income stream somehow.
Right.
Diluted their brand. Or
yeah, that sounds about right.
If you could only see Babe Ruth, 80 times a year, those ticket prices are higher than if you could see him 120 times a year. Whatever. I said 80 because I was thinking home games, but basically they just thought it was a violation of your non-compete clause.
Yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, we went and we saw the Harlem Globetrotters at the Belvedere High School. You just go see the Harlem Globetrotters at some rinky-dink high school.
Well, they're not.
That's diluted the brand.
They're
you
not.
Know?
They're not.
Who's their? Who's?
They're not a real team, Sweetbread.
Oh, darn. Those are some sweet moves, too.
They were.
They played, I think it was they played the coaches and the teachers.
Man. That's awesome.
Of the high school. Anyway, so.
So the other thing is that you got to remember, this is in the context, too, of there were very many competing startup leagues prior to this. So that's why John Tomasa was so strict. Because there was the Federal League. Even what we know of as MLB, Major League Baseball, wasn't really solidified. There were so many. Right. So he was really trying to lock it down and be like, this is baseball. There is no other. So barnstorming, he felt, was a threat to that. I imagine. I'm sure that was part of it. So it meant that the Yankees were a little bit weakened to start the year.
Yeah, but I looked at a quick article today, and believe it or not, I think there was something like 22-11 when Ruth came back. Which is surprising.
Not
it's kind of like
weakened.
The Phillies this year
when
they had they didn't have Bryce Harper in the lineup.
They still played
pretty well. So they both Musial and Ruth were out for 6 weeks. But I thought it was really funny. I found an article earlier today that talks about it, and it talks about how Ruth was given the captaincy of the Yankees. Not five games goes by, and he gets thrown out at second base trying to stretch a single into a double.
The captaincy, meaning he was the captain of the team.
He was the captain of the Yankees.
Got it.
He gets thrown out at second base trying to stretch a single into a double.
What a maroon.
He throws dirt in the umpire's face.
Nice.
Gets kicked out of the game. a Span starts heckling him.
Oh, wow, I heard that.
He goes up into the stands.
Yes.
The fan is nowhere to be found. So he comes back down, top of the dugout, at which point he tells everybody in the stands that if they want to fight, to come on down.
Was this a home game? I wonder where
I think this was a home game.
That's even better.
He ends up getting suspended.
So this was after his suspension?
This was like 5 days after he came back from his suspension.
Yes.
This is like late May.
This is peak Babe Ruth right here.
And he gets stripped of his captaincy, fined, and I think he got banned for about a week. So
classic Ruth.
Classic Ruth. We could have a whole podcast just about Ruth.
I have an amazing sort of trivia question that nobody would ever know, I think. So Ruth had a string of 12 years where he led the league in home runs 10 of the 12 years. Who were the two players to lead the league in home runs those 2 years who were not Babe Ruth?
You have one of them in front of you right now, don't you?
Yeah. One of them we just mentioned.
Yeah.
Is Bob Musil.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was a slugger. And the other one is like the most like forgettable name. I swear I've never heard it. Ken Williams. I feel like Ken Williams is not a 1920s baseball player.
It's a broadcaster name or
hey, this is Ken Williams.
Yeah.
He's like the announcer for like a Triple A team. Yeah. Or like early SportsCenter, ESPN.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey guys, Ken Williams here.
Yeah. Like a fake name. Like an assumed, like you have your name has to be Ken Williams if you work for ESPN.
Or like a baseball card that you don't want, like an 80s. Because Ken is like an 80s name. Like Ken is like, a lot of my friends' dads were named Ken. Like guys who were born in the 40s and 50s were named Ken. Like not guys from the 20s. So then the guys, or even a little later. Like, so they were players in the 80s. They were born in the 60s. That was like that era of Ken. Yeah, Ken was definitely like it. There's like, I think a couple of 80s players named Ken. Kamenetti. Ken Oberkfell. One of those. Kent DeColby. Anyway.
Kent Herbeck.
Ken Williams was a shockingly good player for someone I have never heard of. He is the first player in MLB history to have a 30-30 season. And that was this year, 1922. 30 home runs and 30 stolen bases.
The first in history,
and he did it in 1922. He was a lefty through righty. This year, 1922, he became the first player in American League history to hit two home runs in one inning.
It's crazy.
Yeah, he hit two dingers in one inning against the Senators, who were pretty bad, I believe, at this time. And that year, he hit 39 to win. It was his goal to hit 40. He actually, I found an article that he ghost wrote where it said that his goal, it says, I'm trying for 40 home run smashes, says Ken Williams. It's the stupidest article. But then he ended up with 39, but he did lead the league. And there was a scandal, though, the next year, which was that someone from the Senators got their hands on one of Williams's bat. And guess what they discovered?
Corked?
Yeah. It had been bored out and plugged with a lighter wood.
Wow.
So essentially, it was a corked bat. Williams explained that he had ordered the bat, but when he received it, he found it too heavy. So he plugged it with a lighter wood. But corked, that type of plug bat was not technically illegal at the time, I think. It was kind of a technicality, but it was clearly frowned upon. The Senators protested every win that they recorded against him. It was definitely controversial. Who did he even play for?
So he didn't play for the Senators.
No, he played against the Senators. Why do I have this whole article
right here? I think so. Let me see.
Oh, St. Louis American Club.
Well, there you go.
Who's that?
Our Slobs,
St. Louis Browns.
Yeah, my favorite Slobs.
Ken Williams was like.
They had a great season, and that might lead us into our next discussion of the standings. But yeah, he's. Look at them.
He was one of the studs on the Slobs. Who else did they have?
Well, they had George Sisler.
Sisler Watch!
I think we talked about a lot last year because of his 257 hits, right?
I feel like he had a pretty good 1922 also.
He had an insane 1922.
Josh. Let's get into it.
So I just took a quick look at some of the batting statistics. And first and foremost, the one that stuck out at me was George Sisler, because not only did he lead the league, he also hit, guess what he hit? What his batting average was in 1922? Now, again, this is not the year he had 257 hits.
But he broke 400, right?
He broke 400, yeah.
But not over 410.
Over 410.
No, not 420.
A full 19 points ahead at 420 with 246 hits.
He hit 420 for the year?
He hit 420 for the year with 51 steals.
Unreal.
134 runs, 105 RBIs. 51 steals and an incredible 18 triples.
How many dingers?
Just 8 dingers. 18 triples. Right. Guess how many times he struck out?
I mean, how many at-bats?
586 at-bats, 655 plate appearances.
Wait, how many PAs you said?
655.
So, like, I mean, 30?
That'd be 30 like, would be really low, right?
That'd be like 5% of your at-bats. Yeah. That'd be insane.
13 times.
Come on.
13 times. So
he was up to bat 656 times. Yes. And he struck out 13 times.
That's correct. If you were betting on him to get a triple or strike out in any given at-bat that season,
you would take odds the triple.
Would be a triple.
He had more triples than strikeouts in an entire season of 600-plus at-bats.
I wonder how many times that's been done in history. Yeah. Not enough to mention that he played the entire season and was arguably the best hitter in baseball.
I mean, you don't even have to set like a minimum at-bat because triples are so rare. But if you say the number of times a batter had more triples than strikeouts,
right?
It's probably like one. It's probably that. I shouldn't say that. What do I know? It could happen.
I wonder if somebody out there could get that statistic for us.
Oh, I could
buy tomorrow.
I could get it. Sounds like a challenge. I'm on it.
Get your statisticians on it.
I will get the interns on it.
So yeah, so the St. Louis Browns, 1922,
which like I have the hardest time remembering that the St. Louis Browns.
They are the Orioles, I believe. So the Orioles, the Browns moved from St. Louis to Baltimore.
I always just think of the Cardinals. So I think of them as a national team. But the city has nothing to do with anything. They were competing with the Yankees for the pennant.
Right.
They didn't play the Yankees in the series. No, they're both AL teams. Got it. So the Slubs and the Yankees.
The Slubs, back and forth all summer, were fighting each other for the pennant. And I think as late as the 7th of September, the Browns were in first place. And as late as the 17th of September, they were only a half game out. They ended up only one game behind. I don't know, I can go into the standings here. They only ended up one game behind, but they were two games out with two to play, and the Yankees won, so they clinched it. But, they fought. Tooth and nail all season against them.
So, yeah, Sisler, one of the all-time great seasons. 420, 50 steals, 105 RBIs. And then Williams had 155 RBIs. He must have hit behind Sisler.
So they had incredible hitting, that team.
Well, their catcher hit 320.
Jack Tobin. And
Jack Tobin was an outfielder who hit 331. Williams hit 332. Oh, and who's the other outfielder?
Hank Severalt.
Oh, who's that? He's their catcher. That's their catcher.
They had so many great hitters that year. They must have hit over 300 as a team. Let me look at their stats as a team.
Their catcher hit 321.
Yeah, they hit 310 as a team, Josh.
Wow. Their third baseman was not that good. Frank Ellerby hit 246. Wally Gerber hit 267. But yeah, Baby Doll Jacobson, that's the other guy we didn't mention. We just like him because that's a solid name.
Oh, he's the guy that we forgot about. But
Is
he on the Browns?
Yeah, he's the third outfielder. The outfield for the Browns is Williams, Tobin, and Baby Doll.
Baby Doll's the one that was just like a giant, right? He just had like huge hands, and they called him a Baby Doll.
And like when he came up to bat,
he just had like a weird swing.
When he came up to bat, they played a song the one time. It's called like "Here Comes My Baby Doll."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And someone just was like, "Hey, Baby Doll," and everyone laughed, and they became his nickname for the rest of his life. Yeah, because he was unusually tall, so the idea of him being called Baby Doll was like hilarious to people.
Yeah, but talk about a
lineup.
Yeah,
I mean, I think they had some good pitching too. Obviously, They had one of the greatest names of all time on their pitching staff, Urban Shocker.
Urban Shocker. Yeah, I don't have the pitching in front of me, so you might have to look it up. I just have the batting here.
I just wanted to mention Urban Shocker because of his name. He won 24 games that year. Their staff wasn't great. I mean, the ERAs for Shocker was 2.97, which is obviously good. Their number two and three starters had ERAs in the threes and fours.
And we should probably mention, I think they played in a I think we talked about this last year, that they played in a hitter's park big time, like one of the best in the
Sportsman? Sportsman's Park?
Was that what they played?
That's what it says. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, so they were a great team, and they were competing with the Yankees all year, and the Yankees took it in the end, is what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. Do you want me to run down the standings real quick?
Let's do it.
So we're looking at the end of 1922. We'll start off with the American League, because we've already talked about them. The Yankees, 94-60. A game up on the Browns at 93-61. Detroit, way back. So it was really just those two teams. The Tigers were 79-75, 15 out. The Cleveland, 78-76, 16 out. White Sox, 77-77, 17 out. Washington Senators, 69-85, 25 out. The Athletics were pretty bad that year, 65-89.
So the Senators were bad, but they weren't even last place bad.
No, they weren't. Because the Athletics, notoriously, either so bad or good.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the point of the Red Sox, where they had completely sold everything.
They went through
a couple of years where they just sold off all their players. They were 61-93, just a couple of years away from being, you know, probably the best franchise in the 19 teams.
They really stunk it up.
Yeah. The National League, the Giants, who did actually lose first place a number of times throughout the year, but pretty much since mid-August were up pretty good at 93-61. They won by a full seven games over the Reds at 86-68, and then the Pirates were eight out at 85-69, as well as the Cardinals, 85-69, also eight out. The Cubs, 80-74, 13 out. The Robins, the Brooklyn Robins, 76-78 at 17 out, and then a huge drop off to the same two cities in the same order.
Yeah, Philly.
Philly and Boston. So the Phillies were 57-96, and the Braves are 53-100. Good Lord. I guess it's worth noting that the run differential, the Browns had about 85 more runs scored than given up than the Yankees. So Yankees just won those close games.
Yeah. Yeah, the Boston Braves, 50, I want to look at them real quick, 53-100. Who did they have on their team? No, absolutely nobody you've ever
heard of. Was it the Braves? They had the game that we talked about? Was it 1920?
They played for 9 years.
Yeah.
They had a couple of good nicknames. Snake Henry was on their team.
Snake.
I never heard of Snake Henry. No. Or Bunny Roser.
That's a good one.
They had Hank Gowdy. I feel like I've heard of that guy. And then they had, Snake and Bunny. And they had Mule Watson. They might have the most animal nicknames.
They were more concerned about with nicknames than they were about playing baseball.
They were literally hiring animals to play for their team. The Boston Red Sox, again, who were also terrible, they had Muddy Rule. That's a really good catcher name. And they had Shane O'Collins. Remember Shane O?
Shane O.
Yeah, I remember Shane O because he was on the Black Sox. He was a 1919... survivor of the scandal. Like he was one of the few who didn't.
You went Eddie Collins?
No, his name was just Shane O.
So there was a Shane O'Collins and an Eddie Collins. Yeah. There's an O'Collins and a Collins?
His first name is Shane O. Like one word, S-H-A-N-O. For real, Shane O. Shane O'Collins.
Shane O.
And then they also had a guy named Pinky Pettinger. Roxy Walters, Chick Fuster, Chick Maynard.
Chick Fuster.
A couple of chicks, yeah, Chick Fuster. Yeah. All right, so instead of focusing on the cellar dwellers, tell me again who
won the
National League?
The Giants. And this who won the American League?
The Yanks.
So we have
two teams from the Big Apple.
And what else do they have in common?
They're both baseball teams.
They're both baseball teams. Where do they play?
Oh, in the Polo Grounds?
Yeah.
So the entire series stayed in one stadium.
That's right.
That's pretty fun. Let's run down who's great on the Giants.
They got the Heine Groh. Is he on there?
They got Heine Groh, who he, if we're just going by average, he hit 265. They got a young man named Casey Stengel, who, ooh, of course, became one of the greatest managers, who also hit 368 that year. Ross Young's hit 331. Irish Musial hit 331. Frank Snyder, this has to be a really one of the best offensive seasons by a catcher. He hit 343. I didn't ever hear about that season. George Kelly, who hit 328. And a.k.a. Long George. AKA,
High Pockets?
Yeah, that's the one.
All right.
So we got High Pockets Kelly leading the Giants. And we got Babe Ruth and co. leading the
Yankees. We talked about Irish Musial?
Oh, yeah. Did we talk about Waddy McPhee? They got a guy named Waddy.
Your boy, Frankie Fresh.
They got a guy named Waddy, W-A-D-D-Y. They also got a guy named Cozy Dolan. His first name is listed as Cozy. They also got our favorite fictional baseball player, Johnny Rawlings. Let's talk about the Giants' pitching staff, because they had Phil Douglas, who was Shufflin' Phil. He was in that game we talked about, the super long game. And I called him Spitting Phil by mistake, but that's his nickname now in our. They didn't have any 20-game winners, which is surprising.
Especially that era.
Yeah, exactly, for being the top team. But they had Art Neff, who won 19. Jesse Barnes won 13. Phil Douglas won 11. Rosie Ryan won 17. So they had a number of guys who won double digits in games. So what happened in the 1922 series? Let's get down to it.
Can we talk about the Yankees real quick?
Yeah, okay, sure. Yes, the Yankees are kind of like...
Yeah, we know more about them.
We know more about them, but let's reset it.
We know our boy Wally Schang at catcher. And how about their first baseman? Can you guess who that is? Famous for being replaced.
Oh, that's Wally Pipp?
That's right.
The first baseman? We mentioned Gehrig previously. When did Gehrig become a regular? I'll look it up.
I think 25. Okay. I could be wrong.
But he might have had his first game around this time.
Okay.
He didn't become a starter.
Have 23. Whitey Witt, Chick Fuster. Oh, you already talked about Chick Fuster. Did you already go through these?
No, I talked about Chick Fuster because he was listed on someone else's team.
He was listed on the Yankees right here. Well, is there two Chick Fusters?
No, he must have been traded.
We got Bullet Joe Bush.
Oh, yeah, Bullet Joe.
Carl Mays, of course.
Carl Mays for throwing the pitch that killed, who died? Come on.
He was on the Cleveland.
I know. I'm just getting very old.
Joe something.
You're just mocking me. So Chick Fuster was traded partway through the season.
Chapman.
Ray Chapman.
Ray Chapman.
Yeah. Did you say... You didn't say Joe.
Yeah, I just said Chapman. I said Chapman.
Oh.
It took me a while. So, yeah, Lefty O'Doul.
Wait, hold on. I found an article when I was reading that one other random article that was about an amateur player who got killed by a pitch around the same time. It hit him in the heart, and it said he ran halfway to first and collapsed and died. His heart stopped.
I wonder how common it was.
Yeah, because you only ever hear about the one, but there's definitely been several. Baseball was played so widely, amateur, various leagues and stuff. So.
All right, so we got Sad Sam Jones.
Oh, yeah, Sad Sam.
Babe Ruth, of course. Joe Dugan, Bob Musial, Everett Scott. So those are the Yankees. They have some pretty good pitching, I think, compared to the Giants, at least.
They must have, because that's not the murderer's row yet. That's kind of like Ruth and a bunch of other guys. Right? I mean, right. They don't have...
They have two 20-game winners. Bullet Joe was 26-7. Now, the ERAs aren't amazing, but they're still pretty good for considering the some of these batting averages and run score that we're seeing. He was 331, 26-7, and then Bob Schalke was 20-12, and Wade White was 19-12. So, I mean, they had a, 3.97 or so ERA.
They were 94-60, yeah, and that's what they had Miller Huggins. They were also known as the Hugmen sometimes.
So, yeah, so I don't think I grabbed the whole World Series, but remind me, I think it was, is it a best out of seven at this point or best out of nine? Because there was a couple of series there that it was best out of nine.
I'm pretty sure this was a best of seven.
I do have an article here that talks about, it's a recent article, it's not a vintage article, But it does bring in some vintage photographs about the October 5th, 1922 game between the Giants and the Yankees. That's game two.
Who won the first game, the Giants?
I think the Yankees won.
Okay.
No, okay, the Giants. Okay, so game one starts off. According to this newspaper article here that I read, they seem to think, this is from September 30th, the Yankees are favored. And you can look at that. You know, they have Ruth, they have Musil, they have some great pitching. The Giants, correct me if I'm wrong, they won in 1921.
Correct.
So anyway, so game two, and I'll set the stage. It starts at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, as most games would at the time, 2, 3 o'clock, which is like a weird time. Like, I mean, I know like when I grew up, like that's when we played baseball around 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock.
It's like after school.
It's a weird time, like, because... I don't know if you remember or you know, just from coaching and playing, like, the sun's in your eyes. It's just like a terrible time to play baseball.
Especially fall, right? Late sun.
And if, like, the stadiums aren't set up properly, which they probably weren't at the time.
No, they were just placed wherever they had.
And there was no batter's eye, I don't think, at the time, right? They get it so good nowadays.
Oh, my God, yeah.
So, top of the first, game two. So, the Yankees are the home team. Even though they're playing the Polar Grounds. And again, the Polar Grounds is this really strange-shaped stadium. It's almost like a true diamond, you know, the entire field. So
super deep to center.
So super deep to center, super short down the lines. Top of the first, Irish Musil hits a three-run homer over the wall, drives in Heinie Groh and Frankie Frisch. The Yankees slowly battle back throughout the rest of the game and then tie the game up. At this time, the game is about 4:45. Tenth inning comes to a close. The umpire at the time decides that it's too dark to see and calls the game. And that was their decision at the time, an umpire to call it. I mean, sure. They probably can. So
yes, that's
it's not even close to being dark.
Right. Exactly. And no one was
happy. Nobody wants to stop the game. The fans especially.
But someone does want to stop the game. Who does want to? I don't know. I was just pretending that there's someone.
Oh, I don't know.
Because there's implications that the owners or somebody wanted it to be replayed because they could sell tickets again. That's what I read. Essentially, yeah. It was just like a money-making operation. Where it's tied, it's extra innings, let's quit call it. It seems bonkers, though. Like, they would have had to, who communicated this to the ump in advance? Like, how would they have planned this out, saying, if it's tied and it's in the 10th, just call it? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Apparently, Landis was mad about it. He just thought it looked bad. And because, again, he was really concerned about the...
He was blamed for it, too. Apparently, it was a kind of a riot after the game. The fans were so upset.
And he was really, like, you know, he was so concerned about the perception of impropriety and whatever, because obviously the Black Sox scandal kind of that. So
I guess what happened is they ended up donating the proceeds from that entire game too, right, to charity,
to the war,
which was almost $2 million
to the war charities
in 1922 money.
Yeah, so over $100,000 at the time, which is a huge amount of money. Okay, you're the owners of the stadium or of the teams or whatever, and you're like, oh wow, we have the hottest ticket in the world. We could just extend it by an extra game. You know, they say that about the NBA now all the time. That, like, once
again, I guess the rules were like they didn't make that game up. They just called it as a tie. They weren't. They didn't suspend it like they were going to make it up the next day with the 11th inning.
Set you guys up where
they
were.
Did in the Phillies 2008 World Series. Right.
Right. They just started over.
They just completely started over.
Became the next day. I mean, the money impulse was obviously too strong to rule out. It's hard to imagine the fix was in. Like, I don't know how you would plan such a thing. But
we talked about this before, about how gate receipts were such a high percentage of
It was everything. Clubs, that's how the money was made. Sure. So that game is tied, obviously, and then they go back and they play it again.
So, yeah, the ump makes just this unbelievable decision to call the game when it's, you know, it's documented afterwards that it wasn't dark. And that it was, you know, you see, apparently there was a quote-unquote a haze over the field.
Yeah, that's what the ump supposedly said.
Yeah.
The previous game went 2 hours and 8 minutes. This game was called after 2:40.
Yeah. So it was only 4:40 in the afternoon.
Right.
In October. We both know that you got at least another hour and a half of sunlight.
But then they were able to sell 30,000, 35,000 more tickets for the next day, and they did.
But they didn't make any more money because they had to donate it because Landis said, you know right, what?
Right.
That's it.
But you could down. You could see why they might have wanted that plan.
Well, and it was almost like there could have been collusion because it was the same stadium.
The same stadium, right, exactly.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And then they replayed it, and then the Giants took it again, right? The Giants.
The Giants, yeah, the Giants will end up winning this World Series.
They won game, it's called game three, but it's also game 2.2. or 2.1? Yeah, 2.1. Yeah. That's very confusing. And then they won the next one. And then they won the next one, right? They swept the series out. It's weird because it's like a four game sweep in five games because of a tie. Essentially, they won the series 4-0-1.
Yeah, that's funny. So they won the game in five. They won the series in five games.
And they won a best.
They didn't lose any.
Right. They swept a best of. They swept a best of seven in five games. None of it makes any sense. Ruth did not play well this series. He had batted only like one something. So, one of the good pitchers for the Giants was a knuckleballer. You know,
I think like going into the series, like one of the question marks was the Giants pitching against the Yankees hitting. And as we've seen many, many, many times before,
yeah,
it's tough to hit in the World Series.
Jack Scott was like a sort of classic knuckleballer. He pitched for a bunch of teams, a bunch of innings. He had 50 appearances in one season.
That's a lot.
That's ridiculous. It's like every third day. He started both ends of a doubleheader once in 1927, and he threw a shutout in game three, four-hit shutout.
Wow.
So when a knuckleballer's
Jack
on...
Jack Scott.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. When a knuckleballer's on, you know that can be very... especially with the darkness.
Yeah. The haze.
Oh, the temporary haze. Too hard to see. If I may, I might like to conclude this episode with a poem.
Please do.
I found sports writers just not writing poems anymore. It's also funny that when you read something from 100 years ago, it talks about how something has declined. And it's like, it's basically saying there's not any good shortstops anymore. But that was in 1922. And there's been a few good ones since then. But, who were they referring to that they retired? That they were, the game was mourning.
The Flying Dutchman?
The Flying Dutchman. Hannes Wagner. By the way, brother of Hannes, Butz Wagner. He's in that book. So there's a poem they wrote that Rusey and Johnson and old Joss knew. Home run makers the new days breed since the Babe has taught them the way to hew. So again, it's like too many guys just focusing on home runs. Outfielders come like the morning dew, but out where the Flying Dutchman played.
Everybody wants to be an outfielder now.
Yeah, don't want to be rude. Never a new star leaps to view. They've broken the mold that Wagner made. Rivals there are for Ty Cobb's lead. Heilman's hitting a million too. Hornsby horns in the base hit greed with a healthy swing and an eye that's true. Miller and Witt and the Tiger Blue. Many a star they dismayed, but shortstops, pal, are far and few. They've broken the mold that Wagner made. Where is the arm that is good at need? The dazzling foot in a winged shoe? The dope on the far-flung bushes red. I don't know if that's red or reed. The dope on the far-flung bushes red. And still, you are asking where and who. Beat through the haunts where the old stars grew, and you hear the taunt of a vanished shape. Something's wrong in the days that are new. They've broken the mold that way. Many a day since he was through, but never his fame and glory fade. The worst of it is that the rest won't do. They've broken the mold that way. That's too funny. Like,
it's great.
These modern guys, no one wants to be a infielder who hits for average. Everyone wants to be a slugger. Never these new days of 1922. So, that's 1922. Writing great the season, great. Ken Williams, great. Sizzler. Sizzler watch.
Sizzler is like this fast guy.
50 steals, though.
I mean, I guess he is, though.
Yeah.
He could do it all. And he could pitch.
Let's not forget the Sizzler with the arm. I think that wraps it up for this week in 1920s baseball.
Later.